McGinn delivers. Quinn! Paul Quinn has done it! Now they are believing! It was time to deliver for Aberdeen! That's the way to go about it, even with 10 men!
Good evening and welcome to episode 28 of the By the Minute AFC podcast. We've had another good weekend for the Dons. We've got another 3 points. We're going to go over that. Tonight we've got our regular guests. We have Richard Hay. Good evening, Richard.
Evening, Martin.
And we have Grant Fiskin.
Evening, Martin.
And we have our very special guest, purveyor of fine Dons-themed goods, Mark Elric, a.k.a. Dolly Digital. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm fine, thank you. Hello.
It's good to have you on. We're going to cover the Dundee game. I personally thought it was more comfortable than the scoreline suggested, and if it wasn't for the Dundee goalkeeper doing his usual send a message to the Dons as he always did, I thought we'd be out of sight at half time. Richard, you didn't seem to think there was many high points in the game. I know that from reading your Twitter. What was your thoughts on the game then?
Well, we're now Monday night. Game took place 3 nights ago, and I can barely remember the first thing about it. Really, just one of those routine victories, and I'm very glad it was a victory, but not one you'll be remembering come the season's end. You say the scoreline was more comfortable than the scoreline suggests. I agree up to a point. I think in the first half we created a lot of chances in the first half, but we did look vulnerable. A couple of dodgy moments at the back, definitely. I thought in the second half we weren't quite as dominant, but we had probably more control, if that makes sense. But no, it isn't a game that's going to live long in the memory. One of those games, we get the early goal, which is important to the way we like to play, and we'll be able to just sit back and relax a bit more than we've maybe done in past weeks as well. Compare that performance to the home games against Inverness Cali or Partick Thistle when that early goal didn't come, and it's night and day. Stress-free as a 1-0 gets, because even though they did miss a half-decent chance right at the end, I wasn't overly concerned that Dundee were going to snatch anything. Yeah, I'd like us to score more goals, we'd all like us to score more goals, but we're not that kind of team, and I don't think we're going to be that sort of team under Derek McInnes.
Dundee were fairly toothless up front, I thought, and their only chances really came from errors on our side. Sure, no, we know we've got a big game coming up, Grant, and against better opposition, we're going to be punished for that, aren't we?
Yeah, that was the slight worrying thing from the game on Friday was, as you say, Dundee were quite surprisingly toothless, but I think that was more down to how well our midfield controlled the game. But not just the fact that we were so sloppy, but it was three separate players in the first half. Logan, Taylor and Constantine all had really, really poor moments when they were in no danger. They just tried to overdo it or just lost concentration, and then Taylor had another one early in the second half, and you can get away against Dundee doing that, but I can guarantee you that if they make those same 4 mistakes against Celtic, there's no way that Celtic won't score out of one of those chances. You would think that Reynolds would come straight back into that defence for Celtic. The big thing's the midfield is how comfortably Story's fitted in along. Kenny McLean's been really encouraging. I mean, it's not been a particularly flashy performances by Story, but he's just settled in, his passing has been good, you haven't noticed him doing anything bad or particularly good. It's not a bad thing, just him and McLean have looked far more comfortable than McLean has alongside Flood and Jack at times this season.
Yeah, I wanted to mention Story. I mean, he's staked a claim, I think, perhaps to keep a place in midfield. Perhaps when Jack's fit, Jack will come back in. I mean, would he get a game ahead of Flood? I'm not sure. He's now ahead of Robson in the pecking order. But it was another strong performance by Story, and we've uncovered. He's been at the club for a long time, Mark, but we've uncovered a real find there, haven't we?
Yeah, definitely. I think I agree with what everyone's kind of saying online as well. He's been good. He's doing Jack's role arguably better than Ryan Jack had been doing these games. That might be harsh, but that's what I think. He's kind of slotted in there. He's done the easy stuff, but he's made it look easy. He's kind of come in, he's composed, he's doing a really good job.
And I have to mention, I think that obviously Scott Brown kept his place in goals on merit duties. I think he had a decent performance against Ross County. Not a terrible performance. I don't think he was really challenged very much on Friday. So what do you guys think? I mean, does he stay in for the foreseeable future? I mean, we have brought in another goalie, but Scott Brown's done nothing wrong to deserve to be dropped, has he?
Well, I think the way it's set up now that he's played those two games, we speculated last week whether Colin wasn't playing against Ross County because he'd only had one day training with the squad. Maybe he might play against Dundee. He didn't. Scott Byrne kept his place. I think it's going to be very difficult now to see him not keeping his place for the Celtic game, which obviously worries me a bit given the performance he put in last time out at Parkhead. It was a bit of a horror show, really. Being bullied by Lee Griffiths at the corner, and you know that Celtic are going to adopt exactly the same tactics if they see Scott Byrne in goals next Wednesday. In fact, Dundee adopted a pretty similar tactic when they had their first corner on Friday night. There was four or five Dundee players just surrounding the keeper, and the ball played right in on top of him. In fact, pretty much every team we come up against is probably going to try and do exactly the same against Scott Byrne. And why not? If you know a keeper's got a real weakness and you want to try and exploit it. I don't really kind of understand the thinking behind Colin. Yes, we needed an experienced number two, I guess. If he's not coming up here to play, then what's the point, really?
Well, yeah, I have to agree with that. I mean, well, we know as well in a couple of days the transfer window will be slamming shut. It almost looks as if Derek was telling the truth and we don't have any money and we won't be making any signings. Where there's been no rumours really of anything. We signed an under-20s kind of goalkeeper today till the end of the season. But there's been no real action, Grant. But there are weaknesses in the squad. So what do you think? I mean, is our names maybe think Derek's just keeping his powder a bit too dry for us?
Well, no, he did say that he was hoping to have one more player in before the end of the transfer window. And I don't think that included the keeper they signed today because he's going in the development squad. But the fact we keep getting linked with central midfielders is the thing, and he's mentioned it as well, the thing I find baffling. He mentioned Cowie and mentioned Stuart Bannigan. Unless he's got a central midfielder lined up that's going to be in the starting 11 when everybody's fit, I would be astonished if he signed a central midfielder. We're crying out for a cover in the wings. You look at, and again on Friday night, you just use one substitute. You've got other guys kicking their heels on the bench. It's got to be somebody to challenge McGinn or Hayes or cover for those positions. We don't need any more central midfielders. If he brings in a guy like Bannigan on a pre-contract and then they sign him in advance, I really don't see the point of that, as I said, unless they go straight into the 11. So I'd really hope that... But then, again, the problem with this is a player in the forward positions in January transfer window, so you're going to have to take a punt on somebody. It's not going to be... We don't want another Josh Parker or a Jeff Monacana, but it wouldn't be a disaster if we didn't bring anybody in, but I really think we do need at least one player in the wide positions.
I mean, I agree with Grant that January is not a great time to be trying to do your business. You're not going to be able to stumble across deals like Kenny McLean from last winter. And I think time will tell that was probably going to be our best bit of transfer business in many a year, to grab him so cheaply. As Grant spoke about earlier, he's really demonstrating his value to the team now. Cover on the wings. I just wonder if there's maybe a guy at St Johnston who might fit that profile.
Not the money we've got, I don't think.
I think we could certainly make a better offer than another club's rumoured to be making offers for. So, you know, we can see.
I think I've got a couple of empty Iron Brew bottles, Martin. So that's probably above their offer.
You don't get money back for the Iron Brew bottles anymore, Richard. You're too old.
That'll be the war chest scuppered then.
The war chest discovered. I did want to suggest that perhaps someone as cover for Rooney might be an idea, because Goodwillie didn't exactly have his greatest game again on Friday night. I know he's deployed in a different role, really. He's not going to be that out-and-out striker, but perhaps maybe, you know, if Rooney gets injured, we're in big trouble, aren't we?
I don't know. I thought Goodwillie, he didn't have his greatest game in front of goal, but again, I think he just brings a different dimension to how we play. I don't think Rooney would have been in the position he was to score that goal if Goodwillie wasn't playing. He always seems more isolated and he'd have probably been at the front post. But if you look, it gives the room for McGinn and Rooney to get in the box. Goodwillie's taking defenders away. And again, he showed against Ross County in the half hour he was on. And I really, really hope that he goes with the two of them up front against Celtic. It's going to be our last chance to maybe challenge them. And we might as well, okay, it might leave us a little bit more suspect at the back, but I'd rather we actually just went for it and had a go at Celtic, because despite the fact they're banging in goals galore at the moment, they're still pretty vulnerable at the back. And even if Rooney got injured, I think Goodwillie could do that job. He just needs that little bit of confidence in front of goal. He's got confidence everywhere else, it's just in front of goal he seems to lose it a bit.
I think we'd all like to see more goals from David Goodwillie, no question. He's only scored in one game this season. That said, he's only actually started seven games, but the point about those seven league games he started We've actually won six of them, only losing the one to Ross County away from home. So he might not be contributing enough on the goal scoring front, but he's definitely adding to the team, I think.
So that was Friday's win against Dundee. We're now going to turn and we're going to have a few questions for our guest, Mark, aka Dolly Digital. Mark, I want to ask, you've obviously, you're a purveyor, as I said earlier, of fine Dons-related goods. What was the sort of, was the inspiration you decided to, were you just kind of creating these items at home for yourself and you thought maybe there's a wider market? Where did the idea come from?
Well, it's kind of you to say, so thank you for that. No, I don't know, like, I'm a graphic designer at trade and a lot of my work comes from corporations, you know, corporate work, corporate communications, designs like that, very strict briefs. I don't want to be rude about the club shop because I like it and I still buy stuff from there. I kind of, a while ago, I got bored of the kind of run-of-the-mill tat, I suppose, you know, the kind of low-cost, high margins that the club shops kind of use. So I thought I'd do something a little bit different and put designs out there and see if people want to buy them. And, you know, they tend to be popular, you know, some of them not so much, but some of them are. So that's all I kind of do: put them out there, see if people like them.
Good. Well, one of the things I did want to check is because you've obviously done quite a lot of different things. What's your favourite product that you've designed?
I own one of each. I make sure I have one of each just for myself. I really like something that was a little bit different was the Glory of Gothenburg, the little pewter statuette thing that we made, something a little bit different. I really like that, and I've enjoyed every single collaboration I've done as well. I try to do that, try to bring other people in and do something a little bit different that I couldn't produce, you know. So Pay and Profit, for example, I've loved everything that we've done together with him. I've really enjoyed working with Trick at Aberdeen. We've been doing a number of kind of Dons related socks, I don't know, like, I didn't like it, I wouldn't put it out there. That's kind of how I go with it. So everything that we've put out is something that I would buy.
You're quite involved in attempts to create a little bit more atmosphere at games, such as the card displays. The Oompa Band was obviously one of your things as well. I mean, I do want to ask, where did the Oompa Band come from? Where did you find that lot?
Like everything else these days, you Google them and find them, I suppose. But I can't remember, to be honest with you. I think it kind of came from a drunken discussion once that maybe we should get a band in, and so we're talking about what kind of band. I think we settled on the Oompa Band, and I think it went down well with 99% of fans, but there was a few kind of, why are these people here, why are they playing this, this is a bit England at World Cups and things like that. Yeah, that was never the case. We just wanted to kind of get something a little bit different. I think especially at the time, that was kind of, if I remember rightly, kind of late 2012, and there wasn't much atmosphere at games, and we thought we'd do something for the Scottish Cup game against Motherwell. We booked an Oompa Band. I tried to find an Aberdeen connection, and I think in my Google searches there was Aberdeen connections, but then when I actually met the guys and the girl, there was absolutely no Aberdeen connection whatsoever. I think they maybe played at a university gig up here, and that was about it.
And like I mentioned, you you're really involved in the things like been involved in the card displays, the flag displays and things like that. The atmosphere at games is obviously something that's been a topic that's been kind of raised lately with sort of fan experience, shall we say. And we obviously had the article last week where they're sort of, we've had things like the flares and the smoke bombs at games, and they're looking to bring in facial recognition, this kind of nonsense technology. For everything yourself and other guys try to create a bit of atmosphere, they're sort of, it's like two steps forward but one step back, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely it is. It has been, it can be, and I think it'll continue to be like that, trying to do something a little bit different in the games. One of the last ones that we did, we were told that the paper we had was too heavy, we used that, so we had to change that. There's so many hoops to jump through to do a two-minute display, if that, and it's just, it seems to be too much trouble on other people's side. Myself, Mez, and everyone else that helps out with these things put a lot of time into it, a lot of effort into it. We all want to see it work. We all want to do well. To be turned around and told you can't do this, or you can't do that, it just grinds you down. I think just you get to the point where you can think, why are we doing this? We're just trying to help, like, do something positive. And it doesn't always go down that well with authorities and with clubs as well.
We've seen, obviously, like as I mentioned earlier, the thing with the facial recognition is kind of going to, they're talking about maybe bringing that in, and it will sort of reduce the kind of fan experience. I mean, I know we have, I don't want to say factions within the Aberdeen support, but you've also got the guys that want to sit upstairs, you've got the guys that want to stand in Section Y, you've got the guys that want to stand in the South Stand, and it's probably a difficult issue because the atmosphere at Pittodrie isn't as good as it could be, is it?
No, but why is that? You know, everyone goes to Pittodrie for the same reason. They go there to watch Aberdeen, yes. It's their team, they want to watch, they want to support, they want to follow. So everyone's there collectively for the same reason. So why is that? You know, maybe some people don't want to sing, that's fine. Maybe some people don't want to shout, that's equally fine. Yeah. You know, sometimes I just sit there and watch the football and occasionally shout at the referee or Ricky Foster or whatever, you know. That's what I do. But what needs to be done is you need to get, in my opinion, you need to get a group of people together in one area that have a common cause, a common direction. Maybe some people, like I say, they want to sing. So let's get them kind of close to the action and build on that and be enthusiastic about it. But things like your facial recognition and no pay at the gate, all this sort of, I don't think it's the club, but somebody somewhere seems to want to prevent people from just turning up and enjoying themselves. And bringing this facial recognition thing into it as well, it's a nonsense. It's an absolute nonsense. Who or what? Which clubs in Scotland can afford that? Surely the money that would be spent doing that should be put into grassroots football or should be put into setting up proper supporters clubs, something like Dawn Supporters Together, doing the same sort of thing at other clubs. That's what the money should be spent on, not facial recognition at the football. You get it at the airport, I can totally see it at the airport, but you don't. Yeah. You shouldn't have that at the football. I saw a tweet the other day and it was completely right that there was a number of stabbings, drug dealings, all that stuff that goes on at festivals at Tea in the Park, but there's no facial recognition there. Yet they'll do it at football grounds around Scotland. And where do they draw the line as well? Do they have it at East Stirling versus whoever East Stirling are in league? Do they continue that everywhere, or do they only do it for the top tier clubs? Do they do it international? You know, how does that happen? You know, we have Czech Republic and Danish friendlies soon. I'm not sure if they're in Scotland, but do they bring the technology into that? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I tend to think the whole facial recognition software thing was it's what they call a dead cat strategy. They were meant to be in a meeting talking about the sectarian singing at Ibrox over the festive period, and they come out of it with this press release about facial recognition software and maybe going to the Scottish Government to ask for funding. And so obviously all the attention is diverted away from the issue at hand, which is 20,000 or 30,000 of the 40,000 crowd at Ibrox singing songs that should be left behind in the 17th century.
You're probably right. Yep. You're probably right. That's exactly where it's come from. It's kind of super under the carpet and we'll throw something else in there so they start talking about this. You're probably right.
To add this, it was only last year the people in charge of football were almost arguing that we should be bringing alcohol back into the stadium because we can be trusted and it's not the 80s anymore. But now, with last week's announcement with this kind of talk, it appears that, well, football fans are now back to being scum who need to be identified to ensure that we aren't all criminals. There's got to be some sort of middle ground. Either we can be trusted or we can't. I don't really care if I have a pint at the game or not, but I can certainly know we all certainly know how to behave, I think, is the kind of the annoying thing.
Amongst non-Old Firm supports that 98-99% of us know how to behave. I think what we're seeing as well with the unitary police force is we're seeing that every single game is now being policed like it's an Old Firm game. You know, we're getting police horses coming along to like Aberdeen versus Hamilton games when you've got 29 travelling fans. Situations like the Hibs St Johnstone semi-final at Tynecastle on Saturday. Police won't allow tickets to be sold in the main stand to St Johnstone fans because they can't appropriately segregate them. Yeah, those known troublemakers of St Johnstone with their big rivals Hibs. Yeah, we're not all Rangers and Celtic fans. We can generally police ourselves, behave ourselves. Yet, Police Scotland aren't taking that approach. They aren't taking that approach at all.
When did the police start making the decisions in Scottish football as well? Do they do that anywhere else? The police are there. Police, surely. The police shouldn't be making the decision on whether they can sell extra tickets here or extra tickets there. It was the same at Celtic Park in the League Cup. I know, there was a mass of green seats in the top tier of Inverness Cali, and they wouldn't allow tickets to be sold there for potential trouble, because obviously Aberdeen and Inverness historically is a powder keg that kicks off whenever we play.
It's other factors as well. They'll stop certain teams from playing each other on a Friday night. We can't play Saturday night. We can't get a Saturday night TV slot because the police don't have the resources or wouldn't let us go ahead and play those games. Spots which are currently not being used by the EPL are like gold dust at the moment. There would be two good ones, but we can't take advantage of that, again, because the police deem that we can't be trusted, basically.
I think I do find in this whole debate as well that it leaves a bit of a bad taste in the mouth. That, I mean, I've missed the kind of the 80s heyday of, you know, trouble at football. So I'm just a little bit younger than that. But quite the bad taste in the mouth is left by, there's a lot of old timers who've been going to football for years who get very high and mighty about sort of people standing and jumping about and singing at games or flares or smoke bombs, and I think they forget that I can't have a pint at the football because these guys, you know, couldn't stop themselves from rioting 30 years ago. Some of them were throwing bananas at black players. Some of them were giving Justin Fashanu pelters for being gay. But yet, I'll have to take a lecture from those guys because how about a smoke bomb or standing up and singing's a disgrace? I think it's irritating and it leaves a bad taste in the mouth.
The basic thing, which most of us can adhere to, is go to the game, don't be a dick, come home from the game.
Correct.
It's as simple as that. And I'm sorry, in a situation in a country which, at the moment, it is illegal to use pyrotechnics in the ground. Now, we can debate the rights and wrongs of that later, but that is the situation. And we know the club itself gets into trouble if we do that. Then don't do it. It's fairly straightforward.
I think don't be a dick's a good motto anyway, not necessarily just for going to football, but it's a good motto to live your life by, don't be a dick. But in saying that, you know, we can all be a dick at the football. You know, it's irrational.
Oh, like, I put my hand up for that.
Upset and how angry you can get at something so trivial at the end of the day, you know. Willie Collin, for example, you know, like I leave hating him, absolutely hating him. And the next day I still hate him, but I'm less ferocious about it, you know. Yeah, don't be a dick at the football. That's probably a good motto to live by.
The behaviour I get up to inside the tawdry or inside a football ground is completely unlike the sort of the way I am Monday to Friday. It's
There was the Parkcastle St Mirren game a couple of weeks ago where they had a mixed stand. I'm not in favour of that because it's far too much like the rugby, but I think there at least is some clubs out there trying to do stuff. Maybe they've just got to work a bit closer with the police, maybe some of their clubs aren't doing, but...
Well, I think at Pittodrie as well, we've certainly had games without any police presence. But again, yeah. I don't know whether that's changed again in the last couple of years since it's become a unitary police body.
I noticed quite a few police at the Dundee game on Friday. It looked like a lot of police that were perhaps it was their first assignment at the football. But maybe that's a sign of me getting old, that the policemen and women are getting younger. But I noticed an increased presence there. It was a Friday night and they're training Police Scotland's new police academy representatives. I don't know, but I did notice quite a lot then.
We have to remember as well, we're not by far the worst, because if you come and see some of the police that stand outside like your Warsaw games, then we're a long way from that kind of thing yet still, though.
I was just a way to say that, Grant, that, you know, you'll have experienced a lot, perhaps the sight of some heavy-handed policing, a lot worse than you'll see at Pittodrie.
Just the presence. It's like almost armoured vehicles. There's just the volume of them, and all sorts of weapons and cans of pepper spray that you'd never believe were allowed at a football game, and... They all have, you have to have identification to go to every game. It's just a kind of a fact of life here, obviously, for a big history of hooliganism and whatnot. Their Ultras fans are pretty ferocious, but we have to forget that we're not the worst at the moment, so...
We're nowhere near worst, you know? I mean, if you look at, like, per capita, how many people go to Scottish football games and how many arrests there are, it's got to be some of the lowest in Europe, without a doubt.
But there's no question that the rest of us are suffering because of one or two problem clubs.
Oh, yeah. And historically as well, it's the same clubs that cause these issues.
I would say that, but there's enough idiots in our club and our support that are just as much to blame as a lot of the others as well. So we've got just as much a bad element as some of the rest.
If you put 10,000 people together, you're always going to get 100 ticks.
I was actually just going to ask Grant, going back, I mean, despite the large invisible police presence in Poland, what's the... I take it the atmosphere inside the ground is still quite raw, shall we say?
the first game I tried to go to, they only had tickets in the ultra section, and I was told it's no place for a foreigner. So I thought that was probably pretty good advice, to be honest. So I gave that game a miss, but it's certainly not an invisible police presence, to say that. It's extremely noticeable, but everywhere else is in the ground's fine. I haven't seen anything major yet, so.
But no, it certainly can be shocking if you go elsewhere in Europe. I mean, I think we all remember, went to Dnipro in UEFA Cup, and the home support had that banner, which looked straight out of the American South in the 30s. It was quite a shocking one.
Now that we've finished setting the world to rights anyway, I think we'll move on to something a little more lighthearted, which is this week's feedback topic. Tell us about where you've met Don's players in unusual circumstances. We had absolutely loads of Twitter responses here. Some funny, some kind of, you know, the obvious ones you'll expect, but we're gonna go through as many as we can. We've got first one was from Richard Easton, who's like bizarrely Steve Archibald, who was once interviewed by Archie McPherson outside his house. Now, I don't know what Steve Archibald was doing outside Richard's house. It didn't say if he got an autograph or anything, but you know, and hopefully, you know, and I'm mentioning this one as well, is because we hope to have sometime in February. Steve Archibald has said he's willing to come on the podcast, so we're all very, very excited about that, aren't we, Richard?
Yeah, it's up to everybody to hold his feet to the fire now, by the way.
Yeah. We had another response from, it was just from Mitch, who said he met Mark Perry on Greenbrae Primary School roof once. And he does put hashtag Two Man Hunt after it, but it's one of those things where were they at school together or were they just pished after a night out and they bumped into Mark Perry on a roof? I don't know. I kind of like to hope it's the latter. One of our expats who was on the podcast earlier this year, Al Watt, said he met Fern Snoyle in the players' lounge at Budapest in 2011, and he was alarmed, amused that he remembered more about his time at the Dons than he did. Now, obviously, Fern is Dutch, not suggesting there was any kind of substances that might have made him forget his time at Aberdeen. Yeah, he was an interesting character anyway. Richard, tell us about one of your experience.
Mine are sadly universally dull. I can't top the kind of meeting Mark Perry on a school roof or anything like that. But yeah, with kind of sporadic regularity, and I think it's more the way you act with them. Even when you reach my age, just before Christmas, we went to the inn at the park, down by the Duthy Park, for Sunday lunch. And in there, the whole family shinny were obviously having a pre-Christmas get-together. So our boy Graham was there and his brother was there as well. That could be a bit of early Greg's news for any transfer window shenanigans, by the way. according to Lisa, my partner, I was barely able to take my eyes off Graham Shinney for the duration of the time that I was in there having the meal. So it's more about the childish way you still act when you kind of see your heroes anywhere in town. And I think I might have seen Ryan Fraser in Aberdeen earlier today. I think I did. I may have to check Ipswich's fixtures to see if he's got a few days off, but I'm pretty certain it was him.
Well, we can let that transfer rumour get out of control if we go with that one as well, with Ryan Fraser. I mean, it'll never happen, obviously, but, you know, we can always have a laugh with it. We also have another of our expats, Callum Shanlon, who was also on the expat special earlier this year. He was in line to buy Rowies, and he was in the front of him in the queue was Ian Jess and Tony Kumbari. There's the weekly mention of Ian Jess. We always have one. And so obviously it was good to see that when Tony was here, he was sampling the local cuisine. We also had loads of you mentioned meeting David Priest, including seeing him at Ocean Colour Scene, Pete Doherty, Block Party Gigs, Liquid Nightclub. A couple of you said you met him in some of the local strip clubs, which I don't think is true, to be totally honest. I know Priest, he was a man about town, but I can't believe that at all. The guys at Aberdeen Changed said and they met the entire team while doing the Bernabeu tour in Madrid in 2007. Then they were walking back around the back of the stadium, and while Jimmy was moaning about the Scottish Cup draw, it's like, ah, oh, well, that's not like Jimmy to moan, wasn't it? We had Steve Thompson, who says he met John Stewart on the day he got sold to Falkirk, and he was trying it on with his mate's neighbour and her mate. It's a dirty boy, John Stewart, isn't he?
He follows us on Twitter, so let's not, you know.
Well, let me finish. We also had Caroline Lowe, who said He was chatted up at a player. She was chatted up at Player of the Year dinner, but in Aberdeen by Bobby the Blouse Connor, saying that his chat up lines weren't great. Now, I'm sure they're both lovely guys, and I refuse to believe that any of them use the "I'm a footballer, don't you know" line. But we shall see if either of them are listening. Or I really, really want to know what Bobby Connor's chat up lines were. To be honest, we could probably do a podcast on something like that. We have Rick Lowry, who said Duncan Shearer was delivering a package to his house in his post-Don's career as a delivery driver. Had a blether with him and he's a top guy. He's like, yeah, Duncan Shearer is. He's a great guy. Grant, do you want to tell us your one, please?
You know, I've been looking through the Twitter ones and I'm like Richard, I don't think I can compete with that at all. Mine are mostly the standard ones which everybody will have of Alone Stuart Duff and Liquid or Thomas Solberg and Chiquitos. I couldn't think of anything at all.
What was Thomas Solberg having in Chiquitos? What was he eating?
I think it would have been a nachos.
Okay, were you not that close?
Well, I wasn't sitting at his table, no. But, you know, it's sod's law. It's probably like I'll get a bus in Warsaw tomorrow and I'll bump into Calvin Zola or something and it'll just be too late, but we can only hope.
If you bump into Calvin Zola tomorrow, we will delay putting this podcast out and we'll put that one in because that'll be good.
Well, you can ask him if he wants to come on.
That goes without saying.
I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah. We'll go back to some of the Twitter ones. We have Grant Hurd, who said his mate's dad bought Barry Nicholson's house in Elric, saying we were the first to know he wasn't going to be signing a new deal at that point. On that one, that's actually just reminded me, my mate Ewan actually lives in Ian Jess's old house as well, which is one of his claim to fame, which is a nice wee thing. He likes to put lots of pictures up of Ian Jess stood here on Facebook. He's a bit of a nerd like that. We had loads of tales of people of standing next to ex-dons in the toilets, whether it be Mark McGee, Jimmy Nicol, Duncan Shearer, Billy Dodds, a lot more. Richie Byrne was another one as well that came in. I just hope all you guys that were standing next to the toilets, I hope you didn't have a wee peek at it, you know, come on, because that's bad form.
I crossed lightsabers.
Lightsabers with Stuart McKay. Well, there you go. Well, tell. Come on, here we go, Mark. Come on, you can tell us your one. That's a perfect segue.
No, that's pretty much it. Standing next to the toilet, standing next to Stuart McKay at the toilet, both of us having a pee, and you just don't look at the person next to you, do you? You know what I mean? But yeah, when I was washing my hands, I realised it was Stuart McKay.
Okay, that's a great one. Okay,
quite impressed by that. I peed longer.
You've got to be. Hey, he was a professional sportsman, so any kind of competitive nature, you have to take a win when you can get it. Eh?
I watched James Bond with Gunnvike once as well. I think it was GoldenEye.
In your front room?
No, at the cinema. He happened to be
cinema. Okay.
Sitting beside. We didn't go together either. I was with someone. He was with someone else, and we just happened to be sitting next to each other.
That'd be the best date ever.
It was quite romantic. Yes.
Right, we'll go back to the Twitter ones. When Andrew Southwick sent in that Darren Mackey crashed into his car on the way home from the Hertha Berlin game after trying to overtake him. And he does add that crash is maybe a bit dramatic, as traffic had slowed down at the roundabout and he'd only scraped the back of the car was a better description. Now, there's obviously we did get a lot of responses on Twitter with funny comments about Mackey's finishing and things like that, so we'll just let you install your own joke there. On a similar tack, Trina1903 sent in that she met Willie Miller on the road back up to Aberdeen after a killer game when her bus smashed into the back of his car, which wasn't a pretty sight. And I can imagine him. I don't know if it was the day before smartphones, as I'm sure he's all got pictures anyway. Neil Malcolmson sent in that he met Willem van der Ark in the treatment room when he was on a stadium tour. Sounds pretty cool, that story, but then he adds on at the end, unfortunately, he was getting treatment on the table and he had his bollocks out at the time.
That sounds even cooler, being able to say you've seen Willem van der Ark's bollocks. I mean,
I'd say that as well. No, it's like
everyone's seen Willem van der Ark. I've not seen his bollocks though.
I would say it's a pretty. It's not a tale to tell. It's a claim to fame. You've seen his bollocks, yeah.
I mean, I can't say that I've seen any professional footballer's bollocks, let alone Willem van der Ark. So
no,
yeah. I sense a new weekly feature.
let's try and find pictures of Aberdeen footballers with their bollocks.
Whose bollocks have you seen? I mean, it invites itself.
There it goes. Right, we'll get a jingle made up and everything for next week. It's in. Right, back to the topic.
I mean, but to be fair, Brian Evan next week will have quite the advantage in fairness.
I feel I've lowered the tone slightly. This usually professional podcast.
Right, we'll go back to the Twitter responses.
Because obviously, Brian would have seen a lot of bollocks. International level bollocks as well.
International, you've seen international bollocks, exactly, Richard, yeah. Who's the most famous international footballer's bollocks that you've seen? That's first question for Brian Irvin next week. Right. Grant Wilson said, in his feedback, he saw Josh Parker in Union Square. Not particularly unusual, but it was one of the rare times that he was actually seen in Aberdeen, which is fair enough. Craig Hewson says in that Alex McLeish and Craig Robertson were signing autographs at the big one roller coaster at Cadona's around about 1991. That's signing at Cadona's, eh? All the big high spots in Aberdeen back then. Similarly to that, Peter Elliott saw Jim Leighton on the Space Invaders at Sunset Boulevard Arcade in summer 1983. So I wonder, do you think Jim Leighton was any good at Space Invaders?
Oh, Jim to me sounds more like a shove happening kind of man.
Jim's a shove happening guy, isn't he? Yeah. We have someone simply known as Dandiest Don said he met Ian Jess in a pub in Linlithgow, and he was being accosted by a Celtic fan with his checkbook out demanding that he sign for them. Thankfully Dandiest Don saved him from that Celtic fan.
You see, I don't believe that story. It's a Celtic fan with a checkbook. I simply don't believe that story.
He'll be one of those. He would have been maybe a Partick fan and know but Celtic was his big team or something, you know.
It might have been just a gyro book.
We've got Paul Third, who said in 1993 he was watching the WWE wrestling in Aberdeen and he sat next to Alex McLeish. Who would have thought Alex McLeish would have been a wrestling fan, eh? Which very, very convenient leads me to my one. As some of you guys know, I think you know this, you'll know this one, Richard, I think. As some of you guys know, in my other life away from By the Minute AFC, I am a promoter of wrestling events. Now, a couple of months back, just in August last year, there was a few guys turned up at one of our events for a stagger, and they were all dressed as 1980s wrestlers. So you had Jake the Snake and Hulk Hogan and all this. And the father-in-law, or the future father-in-law of the girl that was going to be getting married, was there as well. And it was none other than John Hewitt. And on a Saturday night, when you're getting ready, prepared for one of your wee wrestling shows and all this, the last person you expect to see, and the last person you expect to like behave like a giddy teenage girl in front of, is John Hewitt. To which we grabbed him, got him backstage, and all the guys in their lycra and everything got all their photos with him. And he was pished, I'm not going to lie, but he was absolutely phenomenal. He's a great laugh. Meeting John Hewitt backstage at one of my own wrestling events is probably as bizarre it'll ever get for me. John Hewitt wasn't dressed up, no. It was all the younger guys that were dressed up. He was just there in his jeans and a shirt, unfortunately. Because I would have loved to have seen John Hewitt dressed as the Ultimate Warrior. I'm not joking.
I'm not going to say anything, Martin. I'm just going to suggest that you've probably seen a lot of wrestler bollocks through the years.
Thankfully, I don't get changed at the same time they're getting changed. I'm out front all the time, thankfully. So testicles are not my specialist subject. I'm going to move right on from that now. We've got Graham Hume, who says his was probably John McMaster collecting an insurance premium for CIS at his grand's door in Campbelltown. It's a weird one, seeing John McMaster at your front door, yeah. I don't know if this one will make the final cut, but we'll go with it anyway. Joe Wimster said his mate shagged Eugene Daddy and Chris Clark. He does add, separately. I would assume it's a guy. I mean, I'm not saying, no, I'm sure Eugene and Chris are lovely guys, and if that's how they want to live their lives, that's nothing to do with me. But, you know, thankfully it wasn't at the same time. That would be one of those roasting stories, and we don't want shame like that being brought up on Aberdeen Football Club. We've got Richard Stevens said the missus apparently snogged Ricky Foster when they were both at school. And he does say, in her defence, she wasn't to know, but still.
I bet his technique was still rubbish.
First it's bollocks, and now we're talking about Ricky Foster's snogging technique. Oh my god. And we're going to finish up with one from Kevin Watt, who says he met Jim Hamilton and Andy Dow in a pub toilet in Ayia Napa in 2000, and he simply adds they must have been big fans of the UK garage scene at the time. It's like, yes, I'm sure that's why they were both in the toilet at the same time. And that's your feedback. Some really brilliant brilliant responses this week. Yeah, we've had a great laugh. Thank you very much. That's going to bring the podcast to a close for this week. I want to thank our guests for coming on. I want to thank Mark from Dolly Digital. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you.
No problem at all. Obviously, we'll thank our regulars. I want to say thank you to Richard Hay.
Thank you.
And thanks for joining us, Grant Fiskin.
Good luck with the lawyers at your door tomorrow, Martin.
Thank you very much. I am not Martin Clunas. I am someone else who does not want to be sued. Thank you very much and good night.